Well, what you look for in a yearling, proudly brought to you by Nutrien, who have their Melbourne sale commencing on the 3rd of April coming up. This is going to be about what you look for in a yearling, but it was going to be a little bit different. I'm catching up with, firstly, Ray Green. Firstly, one, thank you very much for joining me. And I suppose I'm a little bit lucky you're still stuck here in Australia, albeit for only a couple more short days.
Well, hopefully, and unless they change their mind, which they're good at.
We were recording this on a Thursday, and I think you're hoping to be flying home on Wednesday.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. All going well. Firstly, how have you enjoyed your stay? I mean, it was tinged with a little bit of sadness, I suppose, that you basically got here and your copy that was scratched from all the lead-up races, and then it's just been a bit of a drama ever since then. But how have you found the experience here in Australia with no horses to look after?
Well, I've been lucky because I've been able to help out at Yabby Dam Farms and help Anton, and that's been really enjoyable. So yeah, it's not been all bad.
Have you enjoyed, I suppose, officially not having a horse to worry about? I know prior to starting this conversation, you were dealing with some horses in New Zealand. You're still training horses over there, being remotely. But have you enjoyed this sort of, I suppose, different way of doing it? The phone's just ringing, but we'll be right. We can don't worry about it, Ray. It's fine if you want to answer it, please. No, it's all good. He's got it sorted. Have you enjoyed the experience
of being here at
or just not having a horse itself to look after?
No, it's been good. It's it's Anton's gig, and he just tells me what to do, and I do it. So that's been refreshing. Yeah,
a little bit of pressure off. Yeah. I was here last week though, and I know you were buying at the NZB's sale online. It's a new frontier, I suppose, the online sales brought about because of COVID. Same reason that you're stuck here at the minute. It's been happening for a year or two. How did you enjoy that experience, I suppose, the online experience of NZB?
Well, at first I couldn't see how it would work, but it's actually been quite successful for them, and I mean, you can be sitting in a bar in Ho Chi Minh City or somewhere and buy a horse. I mean, what could be better, you know? But,
I've never been to Ho Chi Minh City, so I don't know, but I would say that'd be pretty good. But it is a different frontier, isn't it? The whole world has changed as far as selling horses and selling yearlings especially.
Yeah, well, it's the technologies getting utilised. It's great. Yeah,
it is. One of the stories I know, I think it was PGG Wrightson at the time, but you and Debbie, well, I believe Debbie actually purchased or picked him out, but copy that, you were able to purchase him as a weanling. And so I wanted to find out what sort of process you guys go through, I suppose, as far as do you purposely go about picking out weanlings? Is weanlings something that you normally do, or was he just a little bit of a standout? Was he an exception to the course?
Well, the weanling sales generally, all the ones that they're not putting through as yearlings, you know, obviously it's their B team, if you like, and that doesn't mean to say they're no good, but the pedigree page probably isn't as flashy. But we've had huge success buying horses out of the weanling sale. That particular year, I think we bought Lincoln Farms bought probably seven, and I think they've all won. And Tommy Lincoln was one. He's done really well, and they've all been all paid for themselves. So, and of course, copy that was in that draft as well. So, yeah, it's been a huge success for us. Yeah.
Why the weanlings? Why in Australia especially? I mean, I know we're here at Harasta Trotters, and Pat put up I think four or five last year in the spring sale. It was an online sale, and people are reluctant to buy them. Yet in New Zealand, I've been to that weanling sale. It's popular, that everyone gets there checking them out. Why are the weanlings more attractive for you guys?
Well, I think because there's been such a high success rate. We bought my hard copy out of that very same sale, and he's gone on 1,000,002 or something, you know. I think we paid 4,000 for him. So copy that. He costs $7,500. It's great. I mean, you go there, get a bargain. If you if the horse doesn't turn out, he's you, it's not gonna you're not gonna slit your wrists over it, you know.
So if you buy a weanling, do you look at them on pedigree? Although you just said there before that they may not have the strongest of pedigrees. Or do you look at them in type, or is it behaviour? Like, what do you look for when you go to a weanling sale and inspecting horses?
Well, initially you look at the catalogue, and obviously if the mare's had 8 foals and none of them have done much more than win a race, well, you sort of flag them ones, and certain sires that you'll sort of have a you won't like it at all, so you won't go there. And basically any perusal of yearlings and weanlings is initially a process of elimination. You're not looking for the one you want or that, you know, standout colt or filly. You're looking for the ones you don't want, and you put a line so you can put a line so you can cut it right back so that you've only got a small number to really peruse properly.
So when you get a catalogue, and I've been talking weanlings, but we'll move it as well to the yearlings because I think it's going to be the same answer.
Hmm.
Effectively, am I right in what you just said? You more or less look at every horse, but you'll put once you put a line through them, that's sort of it for you, and you're just what you're left with after that. Then you'll go through and continually assess them, and if you don't put a line through them, well, you're keen to buy those ones.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's a process of elimination until you get down to your short list. And then you can't buy them all. You've got to pick the right ones.
I love it. I've done quite a few of these, and everyone has a different formula. And I think that's the one thing I'm trying to highlight for people trying to get into the industry. I think people have been in the industry for 20 and 30 years as well. Maybe they look at it at a different way. And you're the first person that's actually said it to me in that manner. Other people may do it, but they might have explained it a little bit differently. But do you put crosses through say sires or dams that are by a certain horse? Is that one of the things, or is it more so when you look at the pedigree page and you think, oh, I'm not that keen on it, it's just that you'll put a line through?
Yeah, I like to see a pedigree page that's got at least a couple that, you know, were worth owning.
Yep.
But yeah, and I like first foals, and I like first and second foals. They get a big tick for me.
That's another exception. So you like first foals.
Yeah, and confirmation's everything, you know. So, you know, if they're not conformed properly, they won't be able to move properly, and therefore they won't be able to go fast, and they won't stay sound. So, confirmation's everything as well.
So yourself and Debbie, like when you... You know, we'll stay on copy that, or we could say my hard copy, any of those ones. But say we'll just say copy that for this exercise. He's a weanling, so when you look at him as his confirmation, because we've all seen horses grow, are you guys able to picture what he'll look like as a big horse, or you just look at him as a weanling and say, right, everything's how it should be. So if he continues to grow this way, we should be right. Like, how do you go about the process? You say about the confirmation, because heaps of us have had horses that are nice weanlings, and then all of a sudden they grow up to be ugly horses and the like. It's a question again, just because of the phone call. But when you go to pick a weanling out, and you said there before about confirmation, sometimes when you see a weanling, a lot of us have seen young horses in a paddock, and if you look at them at certain times of their growing spurts, they can go through this ugly stage. You and Debbie must be able to, I suppose, differentiate or see through that stage, because I would imagine sometimes the weanling stages, some of those horses are going through that ugly growth stage. Are you able to do that, or do you just look at them as a type there and you say, no, this horse will grow into a nice horse? Can you see into the future, or do you actually see what's there?
I don't think anybody's that good, but we have certain protocols regarding confirmation. I've looked at every horse I've ever seen that was a good horse. I make a point of going and looking at them. And that's, I've been doing that since I was 17. And after a while, you get a bit of an eye for certain things. So, and that helps. It's paying off now, actually. So,
I asked Mark Burton this once. I've asked him a couple of times if I can follow him around at yearling sales, and he said no. And also asked him what, you know, what he does look for. And again, I got a no, with that one. Is there something that you do look for that you're happy to share with people? Like, is there one sort of tell that you, you know, I would imagine there's more than one for you, but is there one thing that you think is a bit of a sign of a nice horse?
Well, there's several things. You know, how much time have you got?
We can talk forever. There's no, there is no camera because no, I forgot that. So yeah.
I prefer to sort of just keep it simple. But basically, I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
Yep.
And you know, I see people buy horses, and I think, what the hell are they looking at? You know, because I certainly would never bar them, but. You know, as I say, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. It doesn't mean to say they're not right, but yeah, I think.
So yourself and Deb, when you go looking at a horse, and I'll imagine probably Lincoln Farm as well, if you pull one out of the box and you go, wow, do you both sort of, you can sort of see that? And when I say, you've got to say wow with a, you know, a touch of reserve, but you know, if you go, oh yeah, I like this horse here, do you both tend to see the same thing?
Yeah, look, she'll go looking, I'll go looking. It four eyes are better than two, you know. Sometimes you can't see the woods for the trees, you know, and so it's good to have another person there to bounce things off. And so her and I've worked well in that regard. She'll go looking and she'll say, look, I like this one, that one, and that one, and I'll say, I might have seen something I liked, and we don't always agree, but yeah, it sort of narrows it down a little bit.
That was one of the things. Do you disagree often? Like you say, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So if you say, I really like this one as a type, does Deb say and obviously vice versa, like Deb might say she really likes one, and I would imagine there'd be ones that you don't like necessarily.
Yeah, she's more picky than I am, probably. There's no such thing as the perfect horse. If there was, he's probably no good anyway. But they've all got sort of little faults, and there's certain parts of their anatomy that you perhaps don't mind. It doesn't really, it's not a turn off, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas someone else might look at them and think, well, look at that, you know, which is great because that means I'll get them cheaper.
So the way you said that, sometimes there'll be something that you might not necessarily like about a horse, but it's not a dislike, so you'll leave that in that, you know, you won't put a line through it sort of thing. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, the horses are changing. The gap between thoroughbreds and standardbreds is closing fast, and that applies to their conformation and their temperament. I mean, horse is a horse, but the old jughead standardbred, there's not many of them left. They're getting a bit, a bit finer now, so you have to adapt your eye a little bit. Most standardbreds have got cow hocks and and stuff like that, you know.
So you don't worry about that, do you?
No, well, if you're worried about that, you wouldn't buy one, because they're just about all like it now. So it used to be a terrible no-no, but not so much now, you know.
The jug head part, do they have to have a nice head for you, or you can tolerate an ugly one?
Well, it's not a beauty competition, is it? You know? So, no, that doesn't particularly worry me. Perhaps if they've got a very small eye, that might spook me a little bit, you know. But you like to see them look a little bit intelligent.
Yep.
And,
So small eyes are a little bit of a ray gland.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of little-eyed horses, you know, little piggy eyes.
Yep. Yeah. Is there anything else you're not a fan of?
No, nothing that I can think of. What made me think?
It just depends in the package, like sometimes the way they stand and that might make them.
Yeah, I like them to have a nice walk. I mean, that's if they've got a nice overstep and a nice sort of flowing walk, that's a good thing for me.
I said there before about the technology and how things have changed and whether you like it or not. The online videos that people put out, and some people do them all walking, some people do them trot ups and the likes. One, do you like them? And if you do, what do you like to see? Do you like to see them trotting up and free trotting up or walking? Or
I don't have to see them trotting, no. But I do like to see them walking. I like to see them walking properly. Like some people, when they're presenting their horses, they don't walk them properly. They'll be sort of just tutuing along, and I like to see them walk out a little bit, you know, so I can
and you'll watch
see where
those,
they're putting their feet.
You watch those on an online video?
Yeah, I have watched a lot of online videos. A lot of them aren't much used. Here, as I say, they don't walk them out properly. So yeah, but if somebody is doing it properly, yeah, it's valuable information. Yeah.
So and this is Ray Green's opinion, but for people that, you know, preparing yearlings and getting them ready to sell, and I think it's a, you know, I spoke to Anthony McDonald last week purely about this as well. That the world is changing. We have to move with the times and all the rest. When someone parades a horse for Ray Green, side on, front on, but letting the horse walk to a good tempo by the sounds is something that you like to see.
Yes, I like to see them step out properly. I want to see where they put their feet. And, yeah, so they need to step, you know, walk them along properly for that to happen.
It's good insight from my point of view, because I do the videos as well for a lot of actually doing them here, so I like to learn. But I know a lot of other people that listen to these, and they do. They like to learn, because, you know, I think everyone would like to sell a horse to Ray Green, because your strike rate, especially lately, is great. So they need to know how to, you know, satisfy your needs, but also Pat Driscoll's needs and the people going on, people that want to buy them. So and that's the beauty of the way this world is now, and it is ever changing. It's quite interesting what people look for.
Yeah. Well, as I say, it's everybody's looking for something different. Yeah,
you're fine. Sorry, but we're actually here at Harasta Trotters, and they have 25 yearlings going through the sale on April 3rd. Now, two things for the Kiwi guys that are listening to this podcast. I want to make sure that everyone's aware they are all paid up for the New Zealand Sire Stakes, every one of these horses that will be going through. So they're actually eligible for that. And they're also eligible for the Victoria and the Nutrien sale as well, plus a couple other things. Eligibility and criteria, when you look down the bottom of a pedigree page, right down the bottom, how much does that play a part in what you look for? If you see a nice horse but he's eligible for very little, does that turn you off him, or does it make it essential that, you know, people should be paying for up for these bigger races?
Well, I used to, you know, Breeders' Crown.
Yep.
I mean, if I saw Breeders' Crown at the bottom of the page, in New Zealand I'm talking, that was a big plus, but of course they've changed the dates now and it's no longer of any use to us, because it clashes with the Sire Stakes final in New Zealand. And so if you've got a nice three-year-old, for example, you can't do them both. So Breeders' Crown's no use to us really over there anymore.
And that's probably one of the things people have to be aware of when they start rejigging programs. So it does. So once upon a time, you might have said, well, we might put an extra $5,000 or $10,000 into the purchase price of that horse because it is Breeders' Crown eligible. We have that up our sleeve.
Yeah.
Now that's removed.
Well, it's not important.
Yeah.
It was important before, but not now.
Yeah. That'll get a few people sitting up on Tippins. I was actually talking to Martin Pearson this morning. I've got to do some other stuff with him, but the one thing he is excited about is how many Australian horses now are paying up for the New Zealand Sire Stakes. It's an exciting series. I know Jean Feist, she won't buy a horse unless it's eligible for that race series as well. Hence the reason she hasn't bought horses in Australia for so long.
Yes.
Now I think this year, I think there's over 70 horses this year that have been paid up for the New Zealand Sire Stakes.
That's correct. Yeah,
so
that's great. Yeah.
That's then got Jean back thinking. So it's a very important series for you guys in New Zealand, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, obviously, you know, you've got to have a pretty good horse to be competitive at that level by that time, you know, Cup Day, Addington. It's important. Yeah.
Is it, Dave? This is actually going to now just go a little bit of an off-centre. How old are you, Ray?
76.
So 76 years young.
Yeah. I'm going on 45, yeah.
And we just started talking just prior to it, and all of a sudden my ears pricked up, and I'm like, I don't like doing pre-rehearsals or anything like that. I like to find out about people. But you were saying to me then that in 1970 you went to England. Firstly, how long have you been training horses, and how long have you been around the horses for?
I started in a stable when I left school, pretty much. 16, I think I was. Yeah.
From a horse family at all?
No. My father was a bookie. if that counts.
Was he a good one or a bad one?
Well, he was great until he started betting himself. Yeah. So, yeah.
Was that a thoroughbred or a standardbred stable you started in?
No, standardbreds. Yep. Yeah, it's always been standard. I have worked a little bit with thoroughbreds, but mostly standardbreds. Yeah.
Mostly standardbreds.
Nearly all standardbreds. Yeah.
Did you drive?
Yes, drove.
Any success?
I drove a lot of winners, mainly overseas, you know, probably, I don't know, how many, 800 or I never counted, really.
800?
Would it be at least that? Yeah, I'd say. Wow. Pushing 1,000, probably. But that was a long time ago. I haven't race driven for 30 years, probably.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you miss that?
No, I did it first. You know, I just didn't want to be one of those old guys that... You know, that I heard somebody say, what's that silly old fart doing out there? I didn't want to be one of them, so I quit, you know. Wasn't getting a lot of drives, so I quit. And, and I haven't missed it, really.
So when you were 16, like, you started driving, obviously, in New Zealand. And you said to me there you went to England. Did you predominantly before that... just train horses in New Zealand, and you were going about your job with some sort of success, or?
Yeah, I worked for several trainers initially, and then I started doing a few on my own, and I'd have to have a job as well because you couldn't survive on what you earned off them. So, and then I got the opportunity to go to the UK, and so I took it.
That was in 1970. Now, this is the only thing I know, is you said 1970, and I'm like, well, wait till I hit record before we start going there. So Dickie Lee, he went over on a similar sort of ship, by the sounds of things, as well. So was this around the same time?
Dick had been over there a few years before me, and he spent quite a bit of time in Germany working for a big stable over there. And, he was at Prestatyn when I got there, Dick. That was the first time I met him, and he was going good there, Dick. You know, he had about 30 or 40 horses in work, so he was going pretty good at the time. And him and I hit it off right from the get-go, and we've been mates ever since, you know.
He's an easy guy to be mates with, I think. He's quite
he's always a bit of sport anyway, he's a bit of fun.
He is indeed, as are you. Your trip was similar to his. You loaded
the
horses up on a ship, and they sat up on the top of the deck. And
off you go, yeah.
Must have been, how old were you when you went?
About 20, I think, yeah. It would have been 19 or 20, yeah.
Were you nervous, excited? Like, how did it come about?
Well, it was a Kiwi outfit that was running Prestatyn at the time, and they wanted people to go, and I was pretty keen to go. I wasn't setting the world on fire in New Zealand, so I thought, why not, you know? So off we went. It was a learning curve for sure. Yeah.
And he enjoyed it, trust me. I wish the camera was on because he's got a beaming smile. You went to England, I gather?
Yeah, we went via the Panama through the canal and over to England,
And you set up stables over there, because it's a bit of a misnomer there. There's no harness racing in England. There is even
it's
still
It's been
to this
there
day.
A long, long time, but, it's never really... took off. It was probably, they tell me it was good before the war, before the Second World War. It was going good, and war broke out, and that sort of finished. The dogs kicked in then, and harness racing sort of phased out in any sort of competitive sort of form. And there's a small racing scene there. It's not huge. You'd have to look for it.
When you and Dick and the guy, and I think there was quite a few other expats over there with you guys, was it fun? Was it good to be?
Oh, look, it was a league. Prestatyn was great. It was a league of nations. There was Russians, there was Americans, there was Kiwis and Aussies, and every nationality on the planet was represented there. And of course, everybody interacted together, and it was a great, and being young, I was only young then, it was great, yeah, I wouldn't have missed it, yeah.
And the reason the question came about, because I asked if you've ever had trotters, I mean, we're here at Harasta Trotters, or Yabby Dam Farm, I get them wrong all the time, I shouldn't, I get told that, but, and you said they were, like, they were just purely all the trotters over there?
Mostly, well, at least half anyway, at least half. It was a lot of trotters because they had to retire in Europe at the age of 12, from memory, yeah. And of course, people would bring truckloads of them over, you'd buy them. Basically, if we didn't buy them, they'd go for meat, you know. And some of them were still really nice horses, but they couldn't race them. They had to retire, so we'd bring them. They'd bring them all into England and race away with them. And some of them were really nice horses, yeah.
I was going to say, for a 20-year-old that's nervous and, you know, probably just battling away in New Zealand, all of a sudden you get the access to some of the best trotters in Europe that have just reached an age, not necessarily a limit, but their age. It would have been a great learning curve for a young person.
It was great, but I wouldn't say they were the best trotters in Europe, but they were nice horses, you know. They were still good race horses, yeah.
You would have learned a lot through, I suppose, the trotter and different styles of racing in that too, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, it's even throughout Europe, most countries they do it different. You know, it's I'm not sure what it's like these days. Only what I see on YouTube and that. But the French have always been a bit different, and they're still, you know, the top dogs over there, it seems.
How long were you there for?
About 16 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah, I came back for a while and then went back again, yeah.
So you must have really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one part of my life that I've no regrets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was that it for you? Was that the only place you travelled to, or did you travel?
Oh, we spent a bit of time in America as well, so I went to Florida a couple of times in the winter, because pretty much shut down in the UK in the winter, and I went to Italy 1 year, and I ended up, I was about 3 years in America before I came back here, back to down under, yeah.
And so I'm doing the maths roughly, so that's about 35, 36 years ago roughly, you've been back in New Zealand. Would that be right? You'd be about
probably
40 when you come back?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that'd be right, yeah. Just perhaps in the late 30s, 40, I can't remember exactly how old I was.
Was there a reason that you came back?
I had we had a little young boy, and we couldn't get a green card for America. And you sort of, you're living on the edge, you know, if you get traffic violation, or because you know we were there illegally working, and if you get a traffic violation or somebody takes a dislike to you and dobs you in, well, you were gone. So we had to make a call. The boy couldn't go to school. You couldn't even own a car.
Yeah.
So at that time, yeah, so we had to make a call. It was either go back to the UK or come to New Zealand, and that was a no-brainer.
Back with family.
Yeah,
you know. You're associated now with Lincoln Farm, but did you come back with any backing at all, or did you?
None.
So you had to start from scratch.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, but I knew a lot of people. Most of the horsemen I knew. You know, they knew me, so you know. Yeah, so it wasn't too bad. It wasn't like I'd come to a foreign country or something.
Still would have been tough, though.
Oh, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was tough. It wasn't until I teamed up with Lincoln Farms that, I got that sort of a bit of a leg up from John, you know.
Go to that in a sec, but I would imagine one of the big differences, and you look at Europe and all the rest, they always have had the short sulkies and everything else, and you come back to New Zealand and they had the tie downs, and they had them down low. Like, it would have been a very different racing scene that, and New Zealand, God bless them, race over the longer distances, trust me, but you would have been all mile racing. Then you go back and you've got to go over the long distance races, grass track racing. It would have been a fair culture shock for you.
It was, well, I knew what to expect because I'd come from there, but Yeah, it's the Americans and that, they can't understand why we would be racing in jog carts, you know. So, and they still say that, but I think New Zealand are a bit slow at initiating any sort of change, you know. So
I still love the racing, and I ain't saying that because I'm talking to a Kiwi. Your best races are 2 mile standing start. We used to have one here, and the powers that be have pretty much destroyed that. So
I think the horses, to be fair, the horses aren't bred for that these days.
Yep.
I think they've really got a sort of, then the horses can't back up from those races as that good. You know, that New Zealand Cup guts so many horses. They're buggered for the rest of the year, some of them. And I think they've got a sort of streamline things a little bit, you know, and the punters don't like it either. The standing starts is another thing they don't like. You know, who would bet on a standing start race? They'd have to be nuts, you know. And they sort of just don't seem to think along those lines. No,
I'm not here to get you into the trouble, so don't worry about it. We won't go too far. How did the association with Lincoln Farms? How did that come about?
Well, I went to work for the guy Ray Norton. He was training for them at the time, and somebody had left, and I was just shoeing a few horses and doing whatever I could to earn a dollar. And he said to me, would you like to come on board? He said, we need somebody like you. So I said, well, get me through the winter. So I jumped at it, and I've been there ever since.
So you were sort of second in charge for a while?
For a little while, yeah. And then he quit, and then there was two of us there that took over the training. We had a partnership thing. And the other guy, he dropped out after 3 or 4 years, and I hung in there. So... And it's been great, because John's very good. He's not afraid to put his hand in his pocket, and instead of looking at bargain basement horses like I'd been used to, I was able to shop at Harrods, you know, instead of Coles, you know. So that's how it was, and we've had a lot of luck here.
I I've never been to Harrods, but I would imagine it's probably served you well, and it probably gets back to the start of our whole conversation about how you go about picking horses, because you didn't have that bank balance for so long that you're able to, and you go back to your English experience, you've got these older horses that were good horses, not great horses, but good horses coming over, and you can see what makes those a good horse. So the whole part of Ray Green's journey, I would imagine, has served you very well to the stage that when the bloke comes to you and says, okay, come buy me a stay-in, which I would imagine is one of the things that they're key on, a future potential stay-in. You can walk in with a little bit of confidence. You've got a grasp about what to look for.
Yeah, I know what I want.
Yeah.
I do now, and it gives me a lot of confidence, really, you know.
Because a lot of people, when they say, you know, someone comes and says, you know, open checkbook, just want one or two good horses out of the catalogue, they probably go to the number one, number two that everyone can pick, but they generally aren't the horses that are the picks of the sale. It's generally those ones that are that next level down, or even two levels down sometimes.
Yes, well, that's quite true. Like, if you look at statistics, and I know our own personal statistics will tell you that it's the middle market that seems to provide the serious horses.
Do you have a theory on why that is?
Not really. I think a lot of people that place too much importance on pedigrees, and they don't actually look hard enough at the individual.
Yep. And look at the horse itself and say, he's a sale topper, and then look at the pedigree and say, oh, well, he definitely is. But they go the other way. They look at the pedigree, say he's a sale.
Yeah, they're buying a piece of paper, basically. Yeah,
and get influenced by the horse.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy it? I know you do, because as I said, you're no good at poker, because you smile quite a lot when I ask the right questions. But do you enjoy trying to find a horse for the future, or do you enjoy just finding a horse and saying, oh, I reckon this bloke can run?
if you're not competing at the highest level, you're not really achieving much at all, really. So you're constantly looking for that serious horse. That's what you're aiming at. And not, obviously, they don't all reach those that level. But that's what you're looking for. You're aiming at that sort of horse. So you're trying to, like, we're basically developers. We develop them from weanlings, yearlings, right through to the racetrack, and that's what we do. So that's, we're not looking for just a winner. We're looking for a serious winner, you know, one that can go right on with it. And of course, the common denominator is there that you have to try them all. They have to be all tried. So it's a numbers game in a sense. You know, you just have to go through the process of trying them all, and hopefully you bought right, and two or three of them front up, prop, you know, in the big time.
I hate this because I've got two questions and I'm not sure which way to go, because I reckon when I ask you the question, you're going to give me an answer and I'll forget the other question. But you must have a great, I suppose, formula in place. So it's not just that yourself, Deb, Lincoln Farms, go there and say, right, this is a horse we're going to buy. And you can purchase it from Nutrien, you can purchase it from NZB, you can purchase it from wherever. It's the next stages as well that you have to implement that would complement making that horse and turning that horse into a good horse. Like, copy that, you bought him as a weanling. If you didn't do everything else right in the process going along, he wouldn't have reached the heights that he has.
Well, to be fair, there was times when I'd have took 10 grand for him because he wasn't...
Don't tell Merv that.
He was real tough early, you know. He would make breaks for, you know, without any apparent reason. You know, he just, it took him a while to sort of get his head round it. And yeah, when he did, of course, he's never looked back. But he always showed that glimpse of, you know, real speed. You know, serious speed was there, and you knew it, so you persevere. You
know. So with that, you'll go by that with a young horse. If a young horse shows you a glimpse, you're happy to back them in a little?
Oh, yes, definitely. They've got to show you something initially, you know. Like, some of them take a while to find their feet.
Yeah.
You know, you have to wait on them a little bit, and one will show you a glimpse of brilliance, but you may have to wait on him as well, you know. But it's always heartening to know it's there. Yeah.
'Cause you hear a lot of people, I say, oh, you know, we've got this one, we'll go do the right thing here by Pat. We'll, you know, got a Volstead and it trotted a quarter in 28, and yet they never go on. And you hear other people says, oh, it's got the speed, and then you say, oh, what's it run? You'll never get a time out of them, because they said, we know it's there.
Mm.
It's a little bit in between both those, isn't it? Mm. I suppose being patient and understanding what is going to happen.
It's a bit of an instinct thing, I suppose, and that comes with trying a lot of horses. You know, when you go through a lot of horses, there's a little bit of instinct that comes into play.
The other question, and I haven't forgotten it because it was what I think I know the answer, but you said before when you pick up your catalogue and you'll go through and you'll put a line through ones for whatever reason, pedigrees and the likes. If you go to the sale and a type walks past you and you look at him and you go, wow, he looks the part, like he ticks every box for yourself, he ticks every box for Deb, Lincoln
yeah.
Farm. You look at the pedigree and you've already put a line through it. Do you entertain the thought, if he's cheap enough, he's worth a risk?
He's worth a punt, yeah, as long as he's cheap enough.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got to be pretty cheap. But if he's a nice type, look, we bought one this year for $14,000 in Christchurch. And beautiful horse, you know, physically a beautiful little horse. Pedigree used by Fear the Dragon.
In Macar Lodge, I was going to get cheeky enough and say if that was him, because I knew that was about the price he got.
Yeah. Obviously, not many other people were looking at him, but he's one that's pedigree-wise, he was unknown, and but he ticked all the other boxes.
Yeah, which is, it's interesting because he was one of those horses when I seen him going through, I thought, geez, he's cheap, because the year before, here, especially here in Australia, I think in Sydney last year, there was Two Fear the Dragons went through and I think they averaged 65,000. There was only one sold here through Nutrien last year. Yeah. I think he made over 70. Unfortunately, I can't say it because it's Louise Toolman who's here. Yeah. He failed the vets through a scope. But, I mean, people were really, really keen on him. The next year they weren't. So you're happy enough to take a punt on that?
Oh, well, you know, the mare had, he was the fourth foal and the other three hadn't made it. So, yeah, that will, you know, pedigree people would turn off to that. But he was one that was the exception to the rule, if you like.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens to him.
I'm gonna follow him now. I know which one he was, I'll keep a little bit of an eye on. Hopefully, he turns out to be another copy of that. My hard copy that. Lincoln Royale or what's the other name?
Sir Lincoln.
Yeah, he has two different names.
Lincoln Royal over here. Yeah. He was very good. Yeah, very nice. But we bred him. He wasn't one that was bought from a sale. He was one that the farm bred. It was the first crop of Mac 3 that came out. Yeah. So
who's the best one you bought? And you know, you can say copy that or my hard copy because you only paid four and they won, but not necessarily, you know, runs on the board. Just one of those ones that you think, yeah, that was a real good buy. It might have only been, you know, medium price and went on to do good things. Is there one that sticks out for you that you really enjoyed as a buy?
Yeah,
doesn't necessarily have to be the best. Just one that Ray Green likes.
Yeah, there was one we bought. It went through the ready to run sale and he passed in, I think, at 24. We bought him for 30, and that was Besotted. Besotted.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yep.
And he was a really nice horse. I'd love to have the money that it cost to keep him sound, because he. he was a beautiful horse. Yeah.
So I like those sort of stories because, as I said, the easiest one for you to say is my hard copy, or you can say copy that because they're fresh in people's minds. But sometimes.
Well, we got to race him. My hard copy, we raced him as a 2-year-old and sold him at the end of the 2-year-old.
Do you enjoy watching them?
We've sold them?
Yeah.
Yeah, like King of Swing was one that we bought, and of course, he doesn't. Need any introduction? Yeah, we bought him as a yearling and raced him right through. We won the Breeders' Crown here with him, and then sold him to the halls out in Perth. He was one. So yeah, he was a nice horse. Now,
what is the best horse? Like, as far as, would King of Swing be close to it? Was it the best horse that you've probably had your hands on?
I think he's the best yearling we ever bought.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was he a good looker as what he is now?
He's a beautiful horse, he was. But he was by Rock and Roll Hanover but he was out of an Arts Place mare, which is the Golden Cross, as far as pedigree goes. All the best Rock and Roll Hanovers were out of Arts Place mares. And not many people seem to know about it or take much notice of it. And he was such a standout colt. I think if he'd been by Better's Delight, he'd have probably gone for 250,000. We bought him for 80, and he was a good buy.
You must be so proud, of what he's become too. Like, not just a good horse, and he gets. I can't believe people knock him because he leads all the time and wins all these races from leading. I'm like, have a look at the horse. He's just a free bowling great horse, just to watch.
Yeah, he leads because he can.
Yeah, and but it's also afterwards, and you watch through the Inter-Dominion, he's obviously a handful, because I saw at Bathurst when they were pre-parading him, Luke had him up next to the shed, near no horses, he wasn't walking, so obviously he has a stay and he gets a bit cocky, but after the race and just the way he stands there and poses, you must take a lot of joy out of that, the education process you put him through as well.
Yeah, look, he was, he would have been an early horse too. We had to take some chips out of one of his ankles, as an early 2-year-old, so that's why he didn't sort of arrive until later in the season, 2-year-old season. He was a beautiful horse. American Dealer's another one.
two totally different ends of the spectrum, because American Deal is this little dot.
He's a tiny little guy, yeah, but he's just qualified in America now, 153, and qualified really well, so they're really excited about him over there, so I think he'll be pretty good over there, that horse.
Your Queensland campaign last year was sensational. I think, it probably would have exceeded all expectations. I shouldn't say that from the outside anyway, looking in, you guys might have said, oh, we've hit the mark, but you had a really, really good carnival then, and it was rolling on. You must have got a lot of enjoyment out of that, because it was the first time not a lot of people saw it on their radar. I know this year there'll be a lot of people planning to be there, but it was a bit of a, I suppose, put your toe in the ocean sort of thing and have a crack, and it come up trumps, really, didn't it?
It did, yeah. That was great up there. And as a matter of interest, Tommy Lincoln copied that American Dealer. Collectively, they cost under $40,000, those three.
All three of them? Mm. You got change out of 40?
Yeah. So that, it just shows you don't have to, to go to the sales, and pay huge money to get the right horse.
No. So American Deal is by American Ideal.
Yes, all three of them horses by American Ideal. Tommy Lincoln, we paid $9,000 for as a weanling. Same time as Copy That for $7,000, and. American Dealer cost $22,000.
So, as a yearling. Was that just because that year American Ideal was just off the radar for some of the people?
Or it seems so, yeah. They, for some reason, people didn't like American Ideal in New Zealand. They loved them over here. And look at the sale at Sydney there, top the sale there. I mean, it wouldn't happen in New Zealand. People, I think he got, there was only about half a dozen mares bred to him in New Zealand until Copy That and American Dealer came along, and then they got 40 something after that. I think the latest count was about 40, but yeah, up until then they were getting no mares at all.
I'm not going to hold you much longer. I could talk to you forever, but I'm sponsored by Woodland, so there's no problems there, and Andrew won't have a problem. It's almost Sweet Lou last year. On the North Island, they sold good, but when they went to the South Island last year, no one wanted a Sweet Lou. This year, everyone's back, oh, we'll like them. Do you find that part of the pedigree and breeding horses, do you find that fascinating when not just one person gets off a stand, like American Ideal or Sweet Lou, for some reason, it's like the entire breeding game gets off them?
It is fascinating, actually, to see how people's fads how their fads change. Yeah, yeah. I said to Tony Hurley after that two-year-old trotter won the jewels, by Captain Treacherous. I said, you've just thrown the whole breeding industry into disarray.
Wasn't it one of the anomalies? The guy Quinella'd it. He bred a pacer and he only bred two horses. He bred a pacer and a trotter, and he Quinella'd a trotting race.
That'd be quite unique, wasn't it? Really?
It's just, I just find it very, very interesting. You say, look, as far as I'm concerned, American Ideal's done a terrific job, and he should be a good, really good sire. But it's just interesting that one year, by the sounds, people were off him big time.
Well, he was still one of the leading sires of North America, and he's 17 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal horse. Ray, I could talk to you forever. I won't, because you've got to get yourself organised to get back to New Zealand. Thank you very much for sharing a little bit of time with me. As I said, it's what you look for in a yearling, but we chewed the fat around a few other things too, which I really do appreciate it. Nutrien Equine, their sales on the 3rd of April. Harasta Trotters, where we are, they have got 25 trotters going through. They've got a live parade, on March 20. Yearling sales videos will be going up before that, so make sure you check those out as well. And any of the Kiwi guys that are listening, the whole draft of these are eligible for the New Zealand sires, so please be aware of that. But Ray, thank you very much for joining me, and I really appreciate your time, and just a good little chat about a few random things as well. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.